Time or just in everyone dies?
Game of the first half of the year.
Game of the first half of the year. Okay.
Game of the first half of the year.
I like that. This is something that all the outlets do. Game of the first half of the year. I love game of the first half of the year.
It's something that I think makes sense because it removes the recency bias that you get when you talk about games at the end of the year. Like at the end of last year, we were so hot on Marvel Rivals. But now that we've had time to sit on it, to think on it, now we can say, Marvel Rivals, you're the best game of the start of 2025.
Yeah, yeah. I regret. See, there's the problem with recency bias, but then there's the problem with recognizing recency bias, which is I thought I couldn't give Marvel Rivals the top spot, the number one spot over Helldivers because there was so much time, and it turns out I should have just done that, even though Helldivers is
still great.
Still deserving. I'm not saying the award is given out already. I can't go back. I can't go back and take it away. Like the devs love their gigantic WTG award. I know that when you walk into Arrowhead Game Studios, the first thing you see right away is the award that I gave for my game of the year. 2024, obviously, it's what makes them. I think that it plays a large part in the devs' continuing curation of the game and how well they're doing with it. I think that they got that reward, and that was what pushed them to say, like, people are liking this. WTG is liking this. They're loving this. We need to make more of this. We need to keep at a high standard, and I think that's probably I am the one to be playing.
So I do gotta ask you, top three games of the year so far, what do you got?
Oh, let's see. I mean, I wasn't prepared to be hit with this.
I know. Do you want me to start?
You start.
All right. So coming in at number three, we've got Lost Records, Bloom and Rage. We're gonna be talking about that a little bit today because
no idea what that is.
At number two, we've got 2 Point Museum.
I know what that is.
I talked about that one a lot, and they've been updating the game. They just got their 3.0. They just got some new sort of summary missions that they've added, along with some, you got an ice cream cart now. And number one, best game of the year so far, Blueprints. Can you believe it?
Now, did Blueprints come out this year?
Oh, yeah.
It did.
I'm not sure if you're trying to be silly or not.
I forgot when it came out. I thought it had come out after we did the boat game, the goat game, the best of all time, right? And it was on that list, I thought.
It was.
I forgot. But it came out this year. I forgot. Okay.
It did indeed. I've been talking about that game since the day it came out, and it came out on April 10th, 2025. So some runners up I've got. Runner-up Swarmmancer, you know? Really loving Swarmmancer.
Sure, it's a good runner-up right there.
Runner-up for the top three of what I've got so far this year. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry.
Clair Obscur didn't make it on
there. I actually forgot that number three is not Lost Records, it's Clair Obscur. it's not on my Steam account, so I forgot about it. Yeah, sorry. Number three is Expedition 33. I was like, I feel like there's something missing. There had to be something else I played. It was Clair Obscur.
Yeah, I just got news from Sandfall Interactive. They were about to dissolve as a company because they heard that they didn't get the Games of the First Half of the Year, Best Games of the First Half of the Year award from WTG, and that was obviously crushing.
Did you get to that one yet?
Why would we ever? I keep being put off by things, but I'm not done with it.
When you say put off, do you mean like you're playing it and there's something about it that you find off-putting?
Yeah, just the politics in general. It's just like, what's going on here?
The politics of Expedition 33?
Yeah.
Interesting. Not really. I mean, really, just it doesn't make... What do you mean?
No, I'll leave you to grapple with that. I'll leave you to try and make content out of that, out of me saying that.
All right. Not horny enough, I guess, would be the issue.
I mean, that's not a qualifier.
Politically for you, it doesn't show enough skin.
It doesn't move. I don't know if that's politics, James. I guess everything is politics.
It is politics because it's considered woke.
Woke or not. Okay. All right.
It's woke. Yeah.
Woke or broke. It's woke and broke. I guess my top three for now, until I return fully to Expedition 33 and have the time. It's just hard because everything is a moving target. It's just like the expedition. I was,
you know,
China
Expedition 33, right, not a moving target because it's not a game as a service. It stays.
It's not a game
still.
As a service,
but it waits for you.
That's not what I'm saying as a moving target. It's just that new things come out, new things are happening. I have to stay abreast of the latest games. If you catch my drift, you catch my drift.
I sure do.
I guess my top three would probably be Doom, The Dark Ages, I guess Night Rain and Stellar Blade.
In that order? Stellar Blade, best game.
Hold on. Doom, Stellar Blade, Night Rain.
Favorite game of the year so far.
No, backwards. That was backwards. I did it in order. Yeah. Doom is probably one of the most fun things I've done this year. It was a blast the whole time, having a great time. Love the way Doom the Dark Ages works.
It's WTDG, and you heard it here.
For the week of June the 25th, be with you.
And there's
almost
a lot of games.
We're almost halfway through this year, just barely making it. 100-degree weather, I don't know where. It's the best time to stay inside and play.
Well, you know where else it's really hot? On Arrakis.
Now, do you have the ability to make this segue? Because I don't think you do.
We're talking Dune Awakening.
No,
we've
you
been
don't.
Playing it.
No, you don't have that.
What do you think so far?
I think that one of the biggest problems is that there isn't a downside to spice addiction, because if you snort enough spice, you become a gigantic like scorpion monster that they put in a vat and you work for the Spacing Guild, which to me is a win-win.
Hmm. Interesting. People are liking that game. Not for me, though. I don't have that kind of time.
It's not the type of game. I don't think it would be the type of game that either of us would be.
I like Dune.
Yeah, but it's not
like an MMO.
Is it an MMO? I thought it was like Rust. Are you sure it's like it's an MMO? I thought it was just literally Rust.
It's massively multi. Yeah, it's an MMO.
Well, I don't know. Because
it's
like
an MMO survival crafting game.
Yeah, I guess you can use that word, but I feel like that word is not being correctly.
Because it's not an RPG, because it's not Final Fantasy 14, because it's not World of Warcraft, because you're now leveling up a ranger.
Yeah, but that's why words have meaning, James.
That's an MMORPG, Ryan. This is an MMO survival crafting game.
You called, so
it's massively multiplayer and online.
Yeah,
you log in, okay, and gotchas, there's tons of other players there all around you. No, because there's no other players around you.
Aren't you? There are.
Well, then it's
where there are other people around you.
It's an MMO.
Importantly, is it? I thought with this kind of game, you're jumping onto a server, a la Ark, Rust, or that other game that we didn't enjoy, but like the vibe of. Aren't you jumping onto like you have different characters?
Two human or something?
Two human, yeah, something like that. One's human. Is that it?
One's human. Two human is the other game. That's the sequel.
Yeah, that's the second One's Human. No, I don't think it's MMO. And I want to, I'm going to lure you. You called Clair Obscur, which is one of your favorite games of the year. It's one of your games of the halves of the years. And you called it a JRPG. Now, is Clair Obscur Japanese? Because it should be a FARPG, an FRPG.
A FARPG. But it is in the style of a JRPG. Words have meaning.
Okay, so that words have meaning. So
words have meaning.
This is not in the. I don't think that this Dune.
It's an MMO because it's massively multiplayer online.
But it's not.
I wouldn't call it an MMORPG. But listen,
I played an MMORPG.
Everyone is willing to call everything a roguelike.
It doesn't have roguelike because everything is a roguelike. It's 2025. Everything is a roguelike or an extraction shooter.
No, sorry, it's a roguelite, and sorry, it's not even that, you know? That's the thing, words have lost all their meaning in the year of 2025. FRPGs or JRPGs, MMOs or survival crafting games. And this is where we're at.
I played an MMO, Chrono Odyssey, that I was excited about, that I got the invite to the closed beta.
Chrono Odyssey, which is not a gacha.
It is not a gacha.
Not a gacha.
No. It is a. It was announced, I think, 2 years ago at the Game Awards. You'll remember it for half looking like regular fantasy MMO stuff, and then half like Destiny-ish, giant floating obelisks and time monsters. Have you heard anything about this? Because there was a closed alpha, and there was a lot of talk in the YouTube.
No, and I'll tell you what it is about it that made me forget what it is. It's that Soulframe is in development, and Soulframe is Warframe's sort of new fantasy spinoff. So when I saw this, I confused it with being Soulframe.
Oh, okay.
But it's good. It's you bad. Like it?
Whoa,
it's not bad. Not bad. That's
it. Is it is bad.
It is bad. Okay, well then that's all the time we have to give it, right? Because we have so many good games to talk about.
Yeah, I thought it was it is kind of peaceful. It's a peaceful feeling that washed over me when I played a little bit of Chrono Odyssey, because I've been excited for it for a little while, and I think that the trailers make it look pretty interesting, and I still think that MMO is one of the least correctly tapped genre.
I agree. And I think that we are really off to a strong start, because I discussed a game I didn't play and you discussed a game you didn't like. So it's a great episode so far.
Well,
people want to hear about the newest and most exciting video games that have released. So tell me about Stellar Blade, a game that is a year old, but recently came to PC.
It's true. Both of those things.
Is Stellar Blade woke?
I guess it's not woke by the
by the
terminology that seems to be given to it. Stellar Blade is definitely one of the hornier mainstream, or I don't even know if it's, I guess it's like a double A game, right? Shift Up.
It's, it's pretty mainstream, I think. If the numbers are anything to go off of, if sales are anything to go off of, I'm not going to say it's not mainstream. Is like Call of Duty, right? So
yeah,
this isn't mainstream. It's not
Shift
Call of
Up.
Duty.
This is Stellar Blade. I mean, this I'm not Stellar Blade. This is Nikkei, the Nikkei developers.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Would that shock you to hear that?
I never played Nikkei,
but so you're aware of it.
I'm aware.
You're aware of it.
You've heard of me.
but at least heard me. I mean, like, you know Nikkei's vibe. Nikkei certainly has a vibe to it. And that same director, they said, they gave him a pen and they said, pen another one of these for us. And he said, this time I'm doing it again. But as a kind of as a Souls-like, actually. I had originally thought that this game was much more of a... I kind of thought that Stellar Blade was closer to like Devil May Cry, where you were in kind of gated missions. It was very action-y, gun and sword play, and very stylish. And I've come to find that it is actually a Soulsy slanted game.
So I know that words have meaning, and you say Souls-like. So is the implication there that a Souls-like is an open-world game? Like Neo. Checkmate.
No, that's not. No, Souls-like means many other things. The terminology for roguelite, developers had come together and created a list of things, and it had to have like three or four of the things on the list. So we have very stamina-based combat with parries and dodging, tight timing. Okay. Large bosses.
This is Monster Hunter so far.
They require Monster Hunter was the original Souls like. They just didn't do it correctly, because in a different reality where Monster Hunter was more accessible for the first 25 years of it being out, we could have had Demon Souls could have come out and have been a Monster Hunter like, and then we would have that would have been what we called them, because we could have had a Metroid in Castlevania could have sucked, and then we could have had Bloodstained, and then everything could have been a Bloodstained like.
You know? They're making another one of those.
They're making another one of those, and it looks good. But
you should play through the first one on your Steam Deck.
There's
you should play through all of Bloodstained.
Played through a lot of it. There's bonfires.
We love bonfires. Now, are bonfires the Souls-like? Are they Souls-like?
They're one of the things, right? Bonfires, and when you bonfire, you have a...
Because Expedition 33 has bonfires.
That's true.
It has flasks.
This has flasks that recharge when you sit at the bonfire. So maybe what we're finding about is that Expedition is not a JRPG or an FRPG. It's the Souls-like. But a little bit more forgiving than a normal Souls-like, and it's also very much more open world, going a lot of, like, you can backtrack anywhere. There's a main hub city that you get a lot of quests from, and to do the side quests, you would go back into the older areas, and then there's a couple like more linear zones.
Do you kick down any ladders? Do you open up any doors from the other side?
You do, yes.
Does that piss you off?
You do exactly that. Maybe we should be the ones bulleting these, but this is the type of game where you can see an area that you must be able to reach soon. Then you go to that area, and then in this game, you either like unlock the door and then you're back at the old area, or you enable a rope. You drop a rope down, and now you could slide up the rope.
One of those in Blueprints. Maybe Blueprints is a Souls-like.
Blueprints does have flasks.
Remember when you opened the west side door, and then like you could go through the west side door? It's like that.
Souls-like. I remember when I lost the fight to the Blueprints, and my Steam Deck was the casualty.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
That's a big casualty. But now you've got an OLED. Are you playing Stellar Blade on your Steam Deck, or is that a no-go?
No, I haven't even tried it. I don't think that it would be. It is a very, like, outside of the jiggling bits that I think that a lot of the people, that's what gets people in the door, right? Mm-hmm. But I really love the aesthetic. The aesthetic is like if Nier Automata were a good game. And
Nier Automata is a good game.
I beg to differ.
People love that. People love that game. What's wrong with Nier Automata?
People love a lot of things that aren't that good. Nier Automata has PS1 graphics. That's one of the things that's not good with it. So imagine if it didn't come out on PS1. So there. This is a cattier podcast, I've noticed.
It's interesting. I don't even remember you playing it. You must have played it on your PS1.
It could have run on it. The only thing that has all the polygons went to 2B's. But and then outside of that, I think that they didn't really spare any polygons for like the whole world. And then they had all these like PS1 textures, brown, muddy PS1 textures of the world. So imagine if like the game were better and it actually looked like something. So it's
that's good because we do know that the hallmark of a good game is the graphics. Otherwise,
that's partially it. Sure. I mean, like graphics and aesthetics. If the game is going to be. Is going to go for the look that Nier is going for, which is more of a realistic look rather than a stylized look, then it should try and look decent.
I think New Donk City is actually the best depiction of New York that we have.
New Donk City is stylized. Nintendo knows how to do their stylized.
I think it looks better than The Division. You know?
I think New Donk City looks better than Night City. And that's why, and that's what originally was the problem with Cyberpunk, but now they got ray tracing.
They got path tracing.
Oh.
You know, they got path tracing in Doom now, too. So if you want to find a way to break your PC, that would be the way.
Very good. Really crazy.
Tell me about the combat. Tell me about the combat.
I really like the combat. I don't think that it is wildly deep, but it is demanding of parries, And dodges.
I've heard that. What is the build? Are there builds in this game? Like, what's the situation?
Not exactly. This is the gif of me drinking water, and you're saying, "Does it come in a lot of styles?" And then I give you the finger. Wait a second, I'm drinking the water. Not exactly. Really, just the one style. So you're not really. There are upgrades to the characters and different build aspects, but I don't think that it's the most utilized of the mechanics. Like there's none of it's armor. You're not getting a new weapon. You get upgrades to the drone that follows you around, which also is your ranged attacks. You get upgrades. You have skill trees, but the skill trees aren't you can get all the points. There's a lot of skill tree things, but like it's like a skill tree. It's like a tiny little mini sphere grids where you're going to be able to get all the points, and there's no opportunity cost. So it's not like by going into somewhere you're missing something. It's like you will get to upgrade.
No respects required.
You always have the sword. You always have that sword that she's using. You don't have like a different type of sword. So the combat is like the type of game where they're aware of what your kit is at any point in time, what abilities you would have to deal with the boss. And because of that, I think that where it kind of gets interesting or where it shines is that there's a couple different types of attacks. So there's like unparryable, unblockable attacks that where the boss like has like a glow yellow before attacks. There's a grab that type of attack that goes through guards, and it has a different thing where if you time it exactly, you can like teleport behind them, kind of. So it does, the combat has a very good flow to it. It feels really good when you're doing it right. I think it's a very natural game that where you would be playing it, and after you get the hang of what they're asking for and you've leveled up a little bit and you've done some of the side quests and maybe progressed, that you start getting to boss fights where it feels so fluid, so like a dance where you get really good at the like parrying. Oh, it's flashing purple, and when it flashes purple you press back and B, and then you get like a specific dodge that allows like a follow up, and then when it glows blue, it's about to do a grab attack. You can't block that.
And how's the difficulty level on this game?
I think that there is a easy babby mode, and then a normal mode, and maybe there's one after that. But I think overall the difficulty is pretty good. Unlike one of the Souls bullet points, you lose nothing but like some time for dying. So there's no souls on the ground to lose.
Yeah.
And usually there's pretty good checkpointing. I think that for some of the platforming or bosses, like they ask an okay amount of you, like you might be able to like fail and die on this boss, but then you checkpoint quickly. So you're not really like your time isn't too wasted. Overall, I'm really happy with it. And it's just one of those games where it's been really, really fun to explore and do a lot of the side quests. It does a good job being pretty depressing, and a lot of the side quests having
bummer endings. Compared to like a First Berserker?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, First Berserker is a capital S Souls-like with souls from the enemies. And then when you die, you drop your souls. And it is hard. It's probably, I think that Kazan is the hardest Souls-like I've ever played. It is, by the time, to be able to beat a Kazan boss, there's never any, like, you can kind of cheese it a little bit or get the boss kind of low and then act kind of stupid and, like, throw consumables or do something to get around it. It's like, for a Kazan boss, they have a ton of health. They hit you for like generally 80% of your health on a hit. You can't really block multiple of their attacks because they'll go through your stamina and then one shot you. So by the time that I have beaten any of the Kazan bosses, I had to exactly know the kit. Like I would die like 30 times to the point where the boss, I had the exact perfect parry timing for every single attack, so that by the time that you were beating the boss, it was like basically a perfect run, because it was almost the only way to do it.
It does seem like Stellar Blade is way more popular than Berserker.
Way more. I mean, it's not even like,
and also more positively reviewed.
The thing is, like, I think one interesting thing, I think that one of the best ways I could describe Stellar Blade to you, and I usually think that in reviewing, a number is like kind of stupid, but this number makes sense to me. And that number is, this is like an 8 out of 10 game where if the gooner aspects of it are good for you, then give it 1 point. And if it would detract from it, then subtract 1 point. So I think for like some people, this is a 9 and some people, this is a 7. And then ultimately at the end of the day, it's like, this is a very good, well-made game. But like outstandingly so, is it like the best game ever? Is it like, oh, you're not interested when you look at this, and then people should say like, oh, you aren't interested in Stellar Blade, but like you gotta play Stellar Blade. No, I don't think so. I don't necessarily think so. I don't think that it's like a thing that I would have to, I wouldn't like, if you're being told like this is a Souls-like exploration-y action combat game, where like the main, you're playing dress up with the main character, and that wasn't the selling point, is like, you probably are right to not buy it, you know? Like, I don't think I would like die on a hill for it and say that more people should be playing it. But I think that the funny thing is that when you look at the Steam reviews or some of the other reviews, I think it is funny in that it manages to look on the outside like it's going to be a poorly made game, like that they could have gotten away with that for the like dress up and like just Eve's general vibe, but that it actually is a very good, very well made game.
That's awesome. So I think that's a perfect segue to talk about Date Everything, because Date Everything, you might look at it and assume that it's a dating sim. And in some ways,
no, I heard about it because I heard it. The name is
Date Everything. So we're going to get to that. So Date Everything is a game where you start off as an employee working for a mega corporation. You're laid off on your first day.
Oh.
And then someone from the mega corporation mysteriously reaches out to you because they need you to protect a prototype device called the Date Viators. And once you put on the Date Viators...
Now, do they look like aviators? Because that's what
they
I'm...
do.
Okay,
they
well,
do.
There you go.
So you put them on, and what you find is that you need to go around your house and date everything. But DATE is an acronym that stands for directly acknowledge their existence, which effectively means you can look at any object and it will turn into a mostly hot human, except in some cases where it doesn't do that, which are usually the best cases in the game. But the main draw of this game is that there are 100 relationships that you could develop with characters. You're not going to find them all right away because some of them are drawn from puzzles from other characters. But I think that the main draw of this game is that every character is fully voice acted.
That's and crazy. That would require a lot of voice acting.
It's a lot of voice acting. And it's a lot of famous people who are in it. Most of the people who you would expect, like, oh, this is a person who is in video games, they're probably in this video game. Ben Starr is in this, like Ashley Birch is in this. There's a lot of voices I recognize but don't know the names of, but one that I definitely recognized is there is the voice of Master Shake from Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
That's a very funny voice, sure.
Plays a mouse trap in your basement.
Yeah, why not?
But that is like the whole conceit of the game is also that it's kind of like this hidden object game. And as you develop relationships with your characters, you're fleshing out different stat points that you have. You sort of have like these Persona 5 style points. These are like your smarts, your empathy, your poise, And as you level them up, they're giving you access to different dialogue options, which will allow you to access certain hidden collectibles and push forward stories that you might not be able to push forward.
But how do you date the things? Is it like a text adventure kind of thing? Is it like
it's all decision trees. Yeah.
Yeah.
So no mini games, no anything like that. It's pretty much like you're finding things, and then like some of these storylines will lead you to others. So there is one case where you are talking to this bobby pin, and their whole thing is they are trying to turn one of the rooms of the house into a criminal empire. And ultimately you have to lead them down their story path because there is an item in the kitchen that requires a bobby pin to open. So you keep having to push them along and be like, no, this isn't the right place for your criminal empire. No, not over here. So over the course of several days, you're sort of directing them to eventually get into the kitchen. And some other characters will also drop hints called rumors, R-O-O-M-E-R-S, because everything is a pun, rumors about where you will find other different characters that you'll be able to find, because there are some very weird characters. So the two that I will point out that I really like is you have a dishwasher who really, it's like, imagine a sort of like an Amazon dishwasher that desperately wants you to connect it online. And every time that you talk to it, it's just like, I really wish that I could wash your dishes to their full potential, but alas, I cannot unless you let me online. And you just have to like, eventually, if you just keep telling it, like, I'm not going to let you online. There's no way I'm going to let you online. And you can't pass specific speech checks, the dishwasher will hate you, and that will be the end of the relationship. If you won't connect it online, eventually it just resents you, and that's where the dishwasher story ends.
Can you like tank your game, or there'll be something else available?
So the thing is, there is no sort of a penalty for the way that a character ends up liking or disliking you. There are three end states to every story. There's friends, love, and hate. And you can be in a relationship with literally everybody in the house. It doesn't matter. It's kind of just like you're going through and completing these stories. And there are specific achievements for getting like everyone to love you or everyone to hate you. But I feel like a lot of people's first playthrough is going to be mostly just some people like me, some people hate me. And then there are some things that I'm going to have to like figure out in order to figure out how to get everybody to feel one way or another about me.
What made you interested? Cause I guess there's some,
I played the demo. It was Steam Summerfest, and the demo was an instant, just like the writing was so funny that it just drew me in, because the demo is just play several days and just do whatever you want, where you can actually get full access to everything in the game for a few days. So I played it, and it was like so open-ended, and I thought the characters and writing were so funny that it just like, I was just like, yeah, absolutely. Hmm. Why not? I have laughed out loud at this game many times, and I've been playing this on the couch with Alyssa. We've been digging it.
Is it the funniest game?
That I've played in a while, I would say. I think that the funniest game has to be like a co-op slop game, like a Lethal Company or like a Repo. Repo is maybe the hardest I've laughed at a game. But it's not like writing kind of wise.
Ad hoc. Yeah. Like that's a different thing. That's funny because you're with your pals.
I will say, but I think the game that I think is the funniest, but is not necessarily always trying to be funny, but I think the best comedy writing that I've found is in Disco Elysium.
Disco Elysium is trying to be funny. No? Right?
Well, it works. Definitely. Well, it is trying to be funny, but it's not a comedy. I think that this is the best example of a game that's trying to be a comedy and succeeds at being funny.
Not enough games.
I also think that I appreciate how self-aware the game is. There's a DLC called the Lavish DLC, where it introduces two characters. One of them is a small treasure chest named Michael Transaction, And you can visit Michael Transaction each day and he'll give you a gacha pull, where you could pull a piece of gear that will increase your stats.
That's great. That's for me.
And you can effectively tell him, I hate all microtransactions, and you should, you can actually tell some, there are characters in this game that you can tell to kill themselves.
Oh, yikes.
There are characters where, because like part of the game is like, there are hate endings. So some of them will just be like, why don't you go to Canada and freeze to death? Was an option I was able to say to a character, but
what
also
character? Like, who would you tell that to?
An ironing board.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that do you think that there was, what's the meaning behind this?
So I was really excited to tell you about the dishwasher, but the other one that really hit for me is that throughout the day, you'll notice that there is a particular shadow that does not move. And if you tried to, you know, communicate, reach out to the shadow, it's like this giant, like monstrous looking like demonic shadow figure. And its name is XXX Shadow Lord 420 XXX.
There's someone, the sad thing is that there's going to be a human being that plays this game. And then they say, wait, hold on. How'd they know my gamer tag? Is this like a joke that the game takes your gamer tag?
And then, you know, you do have the ability to be like, can we talk about your moniker? Like, you know, and lead the direct, like, it's all voice acted, like, they're, and it's not necessarily one-on-ones, like, there are characters that are in the game that are talking to one another, and you're getting involved with that. And, yeah, so it's just working for me. It's a very funny game, and there's so much of it. It's very packed with talent.
That's date everything. Which is interesting because it's not the kind of game I would expect you to play, but I'm glad you're having fun with it, and it is cool that it's so different in the world of roguelikes and gachas and extractions.
Choices matter.
None of those choices matter.
So speaking of choices matter games, so I played through and completed Lost Records, Bloom and Rage. So I don't know if this is a game for you, but this is a game by Don't Nod Entertainment, who you would probably recognize from being Life is Strange.
Life is Stranger Things.
Which I wonder, that has to be by far their most popular game still. And based on the numbers I'm seeing on Steam, absolutely, yes, the most popular game. Life is Strange has 170,000 reviews, whereas this game only has 3,600, so it is a little bit behind.
So,
Lost Records, Bloom and Rage is a game that came out twice this year because they released the game in two parts. So the first part released in February, the second part released, I think, 2 months after, so in April. So I waited to play the full game and then, like, you know, life got in the way and I sort of, you know, forgot about it. But I eventually got through and I completed it. And I did feel like once you get to the end of the first half of it, you kind of just want to immediately finish it because it's kind of like, oh, shit, I got to see what happens. But the idea of this game, sort of the setup for this game, is that it mostly takes place during the summer of 1995. You are a teenage girl in a small town. You've moved around a lot, so you don't really have like a core friend group. And you finally start to find people, like find a group of girls that you are getting along with. So it's kind of like the first time that you've ever really like experienced true friendship and like opening up and figuring out like who you are as like a person. And that's mostly what the game is about. But it's told from this vantage point of it's been 30 years. Or 27 years, which is the number of years that happened between It Attacks and, you know, Stephen King. But 27 years later, you are meeting back up in this town with your friends to reminisce about those old days because someone has sent you a package and effectively said, like, you guys need to get together all together again. You haven't seen each other in 27 years. You need to get back together. Remember what happened in the summer of 95 and open this package once you remember.
They don't remember.
So it is
95.
They do not remember.
Okay,
which also is an element of it. That said, this game is not it, but this game does have some supernatural elements to it. You know, it sort of takes place in this sort of like the forests of the Northwest. That is sort of the vibe that it has. It has this like vibe of like Twin Peaks forest going on in it.
I always love that. Pacific Northwest area, so nice looking.
Yeah.
Very mysterious too.
So it worked for me because sort of like mostly like the music and the nostalgic elements worked on me. And also like, I know this is corny, but I do think that like playing games from these types of perspective do kind of make us like empathetic and better people. So I do think that like, yeah, there is probably merit to more people playing a story from the lens of like a young, like 17-year-old girl who's like learning who she is. And I found a lot of the story to be like really emotionally moving. So for now, I would say that it is probably the most emotionally effective game that I played this year. Second to only, once again, can't forget about Expedition 33, which I also really think is a pretty emotionally moving game in a lot of places.
Every time you say Lost Records, Bloomin' Rage, I think you're about to say Lost Records, Bloomin' Onion.
Lost Records, Bloomin' Onion. Hell yeah.
But that is, that we do need more variety of stories. I do agree with that. I do think that, like, because the gaming audience is the way it is why you have Lost Records, Bloomin' Rage has Bloomin' Onions has almost 4,000 reviews, while the Stellar Blade has 26,000 reviews.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, Life is Strange, very similar vibes, and also, you know, I think it is just that like people are unaware.
True. I don't think there was any, until you said that you were playing Lost Records, Bloomin' Onion, I had no idea. So there was just very, I was aware that Stellar Blade was coming out, but I was not aware.
I do recommend this game. I will tell you that I don't really think that this game runs very well on the Steam Deck. I think that it is an incredible looking game, but I don't think it runs well on Steam Deck. But that leads me to my next topic, which is that I set my Steam Deck up with Moonlight, which is, so Steam Deck has like in-network streaming, as you're probably aware, which lets you stream your PC games to your Steam Deck. However, it kind of sucks. There's latency, there's like weirdness with the fact that it's opening the game up and like playing through the speakers on your PC. Like it's really not very tight. Moonlight is like it's sort of a tighter Steam Deck streaming experience with extremely low to like pretty much no latency. So it really does allow you to play like, I played, you know, Doom the Dark Ages on ultra full ray tracing and everything on my Steam Deck. And it looked incredible. Oh, wow. I played Lost Records the same way. So I'm able to play Lost Records on the Steam Deck with losing no graphical fidelity. But that's me who mostly uses the Steam Deck around the house.
I couldn't do that. I use the Steam Deck on the hot 100 degree streets of Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, at least you've got the Steam Deck. Better than nothing, right?
Yes.
You've been playing anything on the Steam Deck?
I have. I've been playing Dragon is Dead.
Dragon is Dead, which is a game I looked up. People are mostly positive on it.
I'm big into the Steam, like just after we talked about how
we're the heartbeat of the PC gaming community.
Big into the zeitgeist. And most, I think, James, I don't know if you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that at least 535 people would say that this game is mostly positive about this kind of game.
Yeah, it does seem that way. So tell me about Dragon is Dead. Is this from a new developer?
This is from developer Team Sunset that I don't recognize any of the things they've done before. But this is a 2D side-scrolling, really has the vibe, especially with the kind of fantastical
vibe of Castlevania, because it's 2D, very like well animated, kind of almost really color palette, and some of the animations really give me that Castlevania Symphony of the Night vibe. It is a 2D, and here it is, roguelike.
Roguelike.
It is a roguelike where it is also kind of Diablo loot.
So this sounds like Dead Cells, because Dead Cells also has this sort of Diablo style loot with the affixes. It does have affixes.
No, it's very different. You will find drops mid run, but it's not really about that. And it's Diablo style loot, and that there is like a colored gear grading for like armor, amulet, rings, weapons, offhand, helmet, you know, all that. And then you're going to be finding that, and that does not reset on dying.
Oh, so like Halls of Torment style looting.
Sure. I mean, Halls of Torment works better here too, because you will very quickly into the game, on killing like the first boss, you have to get a legendary on every boss kill. And the legendaries are very Diablo-esque in that they are something that modifies an ability a lot. So, like, an example could be there's three different characters that I know of. I think maybe there's four if you continue playing, but I have 20 hours in it so far. But there's three different characters. Each of them have their own vibe. There is a kind of like sword magic swordsman that has a skill tree of like different types of magic that work together in different ways. Different types of like elemental magic. There is a berserker that is a like blood health tanky type. And then there's a revenant, which is a ranged like poison plus also like pet summoner kind of druid type. And when you find gear for them, you keep the gear between the runs, and the gear might say something like, whenever you throw a ice lance, it explodes, and then if the enemy dies, then it sends ice lances in that direction. And then, so more often than not, I find that I go into the run, kitted out and equipped for the run, thinking, I'm playing this character with this build. I am going to go down the talent tree and pick a lot of the ice kind of building things, because I have all this like gear that's going to work and synergize with this particular ice skill. A lot of those aspects are like pretty static, even though you can dynamically find things per run. But then every room, there's a good amount of like dynamic upgrades that might push you in a different direction or make you want to do something different. This game goes some of the hardest in the, like, you're breaking the game to get further. I think that the first run or two, you would be thinking that this game is a little bit, like, slower and more methodical, and you're moving around, and that, like, it's a little bit harder, and the bosses are, like, kind of difficult. And then as you are playing the game more, and you're getting the epic, you know, tiered loot that has affixes that change the way that some of your abilities work, and you're going into a run and you're really strong, that you are like restarting a run, and then you're like one-shotting the first boss the second like anything appears on screen, dying, or like this nightmare monster that is just throwing, you know, an ice lance that explodes into several thousand ice lances. It's extremely fun. It's very cool. It has that visceral appeal. Like, it does feel very good in action, and it's very the loot and talent trees are really neat. I think they're really, really cool. It kind of goes in a different direction of other roguelikes, in that I don't think that there's ever been a run recently that I haven't popped off in a way that is ridiculous. Like, something gets going where it is, you know, so ridiculous compared to the beginning opening hours of this game, that is like an attack that is triggering like four other attacks at the same time, you know, and it's super enjoyable to play. I think it's been an awesome Steam Deck game. Has a good vibe, and it does loot and rogue like pretty well. It's definitely some of the rogue like is the important word, because it's definitely like so much. There's so much progression between each of the runs.
So you're saying it's more rogue light.
That's what I'm saying. More rogue light than rogue like, where you have like pretty crazy progression. Like you do get really strong, and the account wise, you're getting very strong compared to just you start off with nothing in a run. Like you're starting off with like a lot for going into the first room.
So on that note, I played a similar game, which is Lost in Random, The Eternal Die.
I was kind of excited for this, and then...
Don't be.
Yeah, I know, and then you texted me and said that...
Don't be excited for this. So this is a game that is similar to... It's got a similar sort of style to Hades. So the first Lost in Random was more of like an adventure game where you're like going through, following a story, meeting characters and stuff. And this one is a far departure where it's pretty much just taking the same world, but then sort of making it like a Hades style game, which is you are taking that. First off, it's a good looking game. It's got a good style to it. And it's got kind of like this Alice in Wonderland style world to it, where you are running around rooms that sort of have like a vibe of like, I don't know, like Cheshire Cat style. Like you're on like a chessboard.
Alice in Wonderland.
You're throwing like a die around and stuff like that. But for the most part, what you're doing is you are going room to room, clearing enemies and getting a reward for that room. But the rewards are not really interesting, and your kit doesn't really change much throughout the game. Like, you have a sword, and later on you get a bow, and you're always throwing a die, and then you get one modular ability, which is sort of like a super ability that, like, charges up over time. But for the most part, the only thing that you're changing is that, like, super ability. You're, like, getting different passives, and it's, like, throughout the run, what you're doing is you're, like, getting slightly stronger and doing more damage and, like, getting a slight bit of synergy. But the synergy is, like, so boring. It doesn't really feel like you're constructing a build or like finding something that's worth building around. So what you're kind of left with is just like this combat that you've seen before that really isn't doing anything like as well as Hades, with less diversity than a game like Sworn or Windblown even. So I don't know if like maybe they were developing this game at a time when there weren't a million different people who were also trying to do a Hades clone. But at this point, we just have so many games that are just like Hades that we really don't need another one unless it's doing something novel.
Yeah, play Sworn or play Hades 2.
Yeah. Yeah, Hades 2 just came out with an update. If you're looking for something with like a little bit more build variety, I would personally recommend the thing that I've been digging the most that kind of has the build variety, but a little bit different of a style is Astral Ascent. That's the one that I would recommend right now if you're like looking for something to hold you over while you wait for Hades 2 to finish. That's the one that I've been digging the most. But I did play a lot of games during the Summer Game Fest. I played through a lot of different demos. So let me give you some highlights. So the first one is Void Breaker. I think that this
I'm gonna start looking at these.
I think this is one that you
is it Void Slash Breaker or Void.
Yes, Void Slash Breaker. So this is a first person shooter. That has that real like shiny Unreal Engine 5 style vibe to it. I don't really know what you would consider like this type of aesthetic, if it's kind of like
almost like a glitch, disease glitch or something. Like
kind of glitch, I think, is the main word. But this is a weapon building roguelite where you're going in with like a base gun. So you might go in with like a pistol or like an assault rifle, And then throughout the game, you are getting like these weapon parts, but they sort of manifest in like, imagine that you're looking at like the Resident Evil inventory, and that's your gun. And then like you're slotting these different pieces that you find, but the pieces are all different shapes. So it's kind of like this puzzle game. Mycopunk is similar to the way that it has a setup, but I didn't want to use that frame of reference because that's a pretty obscure game. But the idea is that you're building your weapon based on these sort of drops. And then otherwise, it's just like a shooter that also similarly has these sort of Hades-style rooms to them, where it's like if you go in this direction, you're going to get like a weapon upgrade. If you go in this direction, you're going to fight difficult enemies that are going to give you this resource that carries over run to run. So, you're making decisions about, do I invest in my current run or do I invest in my future runs? That sort of stuff. And I believe that this is made primarily by a single developer. The part of this demo that I did not like, and maybe this is a bit nitpicky, but it is such an incredible, like way too much story, like so much story, so much dialogue. When I know what the game is, I see the game, I just want to shoot things. And I feel like the demo takes a really long time to get into it. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. I have been also playing some demos recently, and I think I'll play some of them. But my usual way of dealing with the demo is that I don't play it for very long. And if there's any story stuff, I usually skip it. And I just want to feel the vibe of it. And then after I've got a vibe check, oh, that's not great. After I've got the vibe checked, then I'm like, okay. Because the good thing with the demos are something, it's so weird. Do you play demos usually?
I play demos. Okay, I play demos for games I'm uncertain of. If I know I'm going to play a game 100%, I don't play the demo.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't do that either. But there are a lot of, I guess it's just the time we live in where there's a lot of really great access to Unreal 5 is like a crazy gorgeous engine. So smaller devs are making these incredibly good looking single A games that are very creative and that are testing new elements of game design. And because of that, I think that this year I've seen so many small games be surprisingly interesting looking, but you never really know. And that's why I've been playing the demos, just to see if there's like, because sometimes you could just play for 10 seconds and just think, this will never be there. This will never get to.
And so one of the things that I've said over the last couple weeks or the last couple episodes is like, a game has to do something new.
It does.
One game that I thought is doing something new in a pretty interesting way is TerraTech Legion. So the demo for this, have you played Kingdom Hearts?
I have, definitely.
Do you remember the gummy ship?
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay, so.
Okay, Bullet
Heaven Roguelite, where the drops are pieces of a vehicle that you attach.
That is very creative, yeah. That's very creative.
And that's what this game is. Yeah, that's it. That's the whole game.
I'm looking at the trailer here, and there's the whole, like, nuts and bolts. You're moving the car, you're moving your tank car ship around, and you're putting on more wheels and guns, and there's hundreds and thousands of enemies, and you're just running them over.
Yeah, and the idea is that there are like different engineers, and those are like the characters that you start out as. And my understanding is that depending on who you play, those affect the types of drops that you will get. So you could sort of choose the character, and then the build trends in that direction of the character that you choose. And that's the whole thing. So
I had played a couple demos. I played the demo for, I got invited to 13Z playtest, 13 Zodiac, and played a little bit of it and thought, like, I'm here or there on it. It kind of almost has a Gunfire Reborn aesthetic. And other outside of that, it is also very Hades, roguelike, room to room. You're picking what the next room's reward is going to be, but you pick a character in the beginning of it, a la.
I like the look of it.
Gunfire.
I like the look of it.
It plays okay, and it's going to be, it's also hate, it's also gunfire-y in that you would pick a character. There's, I think, 8 planned for launch, and you would pick up, you would, like, be playing runs, unlocking other characters, upgrading those characters down, like, their specific talent tree, and then you could play with up to other, I believe, 4 friends, and then be playing this, like, Hades-style game where you're choosing where you're going to go next, for what reward, and making a sort of build out of the choices you're making.
That could be successful if it's good.
It certainly could be. I think that it's a little early. Just some weird wonky stuff with, like, it could play a little bit better. There was some weird stuff with the playtest. Like, I was in a room where it was like tons of enemies who were going to get spawned for 2 minutes, and you had to stay alive, but the music stopped playing after like a minute and 30 seconds. So there was like the music had this big crescendo and end last
right.
of the fight in this room was quiet with me just like killing things. So needs a little, maybe needs a little work.
Needs some tuning.
But that's why they're doing the playtest, right? So
yes. I briefly played Clover Pit, which is a slot machine roguelite that kind of has Inscription vibes to it, where you are in this like room with like this giant pit beneath you. And in order to satisfy, you know, if you don't want to get the floor pulled out from beneath you and die, you need to play a slot machine, but you are sort of a... investing in these different charms, which are giving you different ways to impact the slots on the machine. That'll be things like you are more likely to find lemons, or the lemons that are on your board are more likely to do this thing, and you're sort of building synergies based on what you want to see on the slot board, and then you're just pulling the slots and manipulating it. So it is pretty much just like you are trying to manipulate the luck. And there might be more to this game that we don't know about yet, where there could be some like Inscription sort of more going on than we know about from just the demo. It seems like it could be going in that direction.
Is there any reason why you say that, or just a vibe?
It's the vibe of the game. It seems like there's sort of like some story stuff going on the side. There's like a phone, and there's like a character that's like trying to reach out to you on the phone. And then, funny enough, I played another pit game, so that was Clover Pit, but I also played Ball Pit, which I think is probably one of the most popular demos from the Steam Next Fest. So this is a brick breaker roguelite where you are upgrading and combining different balls. So you are drafting different types of balls that will do different things. In order to kill hordes of enemies. And then at the end of each run, it sort of has this like Loop Hero style town development aspect to it. If you played that one.
I played Loop Hero.
Remember, everyone was into Loop Hero for a couple weeks.
It was too bad. Loop Hero could have been such a better game. Loop Hero got what it deserved, I think. Which is that it could have been a better game. It could have been like a breakout hit, and instead it was just... good. It really lacked like variety between runs, and also like runs popping off in interesting ways.
Yeah, I think that they iterated on that game. I think it was mildly successful. I mean, for what it was. But yeah, Ball Pit is cool. Similarly, like there's different characters and builds you could go for. One thing that I really liked about this game was once you so they're the different balls, and they're doing things like, every time that you hit an enemy, fire out a laser. Or you might have another ball that's like, this ball passes through all enemies until it comes back. But one thing that's really neat is that once you upgrade any ball to max level, you can combine it with any other max level ball. Which means those two balls that I just described, anytime you hit something, fire a laser and pass through everything, means that you could make a ball that passes through everything and fires a laser at everything, which is really fun to sort of build the synergies out on. But it goes a step further than that, because every ball also has secret evolutions that they don't tell you about. But some of them you can kind of intuit. So there's one ball that creates like horizontal lasers and another ball that creates vertical lasers. And you can combine those two together to get the sort of like orbital laser effect. Or you can combine like the fireball with the ice ball, and that'll create like a new type of status effect ball, like a frost fireball. And that does, you know, different stuff. And then you get the earth and the wind ball, and you combine those, and then you take the earth ball, wind ball, and you combine that with the fireball, ice ball. You see what I'm getting?
Poison ball.
There's a poison ball.
There's a poison
ball. Absolutely. If there's a poison
ball. They put that in for me so that I could say poison procs the poison.
There's a broodling ball where it's like a bug ball that has a chance to spawn other balls when you hit. And then you could create a build, like a summoner build, out of like, you could take passives, because obviously there's also passives on top of this, where it's like your summoned balls, your like baby balls do extra damage. And then you just make a whole build around summoning a ton of baby balls. I could see this being a game you would enjoy. Works well on Steam Deck.
Perhaps. There's so many good games I've been playing on my Steam Deck. I just playing Blaze Blue Entropy. Is it Entropy?
Yeah, Effect? I was Entropy Effect. I was thinking about getting into that.
I had played it in the beta or like the early access, I'm sorry, a long time ago. And I felt like okay about it. I had a lot of complaints more than I had things that I felt positive about. And I feel like from a year or so ago when I played it till its 1.0, which was, I think, more recently or this year at least. Blaze Blue Entry Effect. Let's see when it February 14th this year. Because they're coming out with there's Hazama DLC and there's Bullet DLC. Is one of the most wishlisted thing right now on Steam. And I know that this game is like actually pretty surprisingly popular. And it's like, I think it's like especially huge in Japan. So weird choice, but stop me if you heard this before, because gaming is has certainly got genres. Side-scrolling action roguelike. Roguelite.
Like a Dead Cells, if you will.
Like it. No, because I don't think that you're finding loot, you're upgrading like the character's kit. Because the weird part about it is that again, I said Blaze Blue Entropy Effect,
and it's a pretty good looking game, and you do get to play as Blaze Blue characters.
Yeah, they actually improved. It was already a pretty good looking game when I played it in early access, but I think that they improved furthermore on how good it looks and good it plays. But the weird thing is that Blaze Blue is a fighting game, so. Think about a fighting game where they kind of like took those sprites, but like gussied them up way better. And then you start out each run as a character that you picked. Most of the characters, there's like 12 or so unlockable ones. And then now they're paid DLC for so far Hazama and Bullet, as I said, so far.
Rachel also, right?
Rachel's free.
Free DLC, $5.
Oh, I don't know. Is it because is it like free to play or something? Because I have Rachel and I didn't pay for Rachel.
Well, she's a $5 character now. Maybe because you had an
early access or something. I'm not sure. A run would start out with something like you're playing as a Blaze.
Are you unlocking characters or are all the characters
available? You do unlock the characters. You pick. In the beginning, you get one choice out of the 13 or so characters. And then
nice.
As
you're... I'm going to pick Taukaka.
That is a choice.
Oh, shit. Nice.
And I'm in. You play the character. And the characters have, like, basic kits that are kind of true to their Blaze Blue origins. So an example, my best example, Ragna. His special attacks hurt him. But his... The end of his regular combos heals him, a la Ragna. Health manipulation kind of is like what he did in Blaze Blue. But the kit would start out something like you have regular attack and you have a special button. Regular attack does like attack, and then there's also a hold to do an attack. And then the special button does something. So for Ragna's, he does like a projectile wave, the scythe thing. And then as you're going room to room, some of the things you could be unlocking things like gain access to better or longer dashes gain access to double jumps, triple jumps, or whatever, but also gain access to stuff like press up when you're pressing attack to do a dragon punch as Ragna, who had a dragon punch in that game, and you're invincible doing it. Gaining access to some of his abilities, like instead of just having the skill button do one thing, you get an upgrade that's now you can press skill button to the side and do one of his other moves from the game. And you're also doing other kind of like general roguelike-y things. There's kind of like fire, ice, and lightning style of builds. And similar to Hades, you can modify your attacks with it. So it would be like I'm putting lightning on my auto attacks. I'm putting lightning on my skill or fire on my skill. And that like a certain number of fire is going to, you know, burn an enemy. Lightning is going to trigger a chain lightning if you hit an enemy. So really interesting kind of choice of like and it's kind of cool to see a modular style of roguelike, because there's so many roguelikes that are doing their own thing. But this is kind of modular, and that there's going to be DLC characters, and there's room to innovate and upgrade the game. But it plays very well, and if people like BlazBlue, I think that really cool to like pilot a BlazBlue character that you like.
Is BlazBlue the most underappreciated fighting game series of all time? Discuss.
Arguably, yeah.
I hear that Arxis has a announcement in 2 days.
I wonder if that's about the Marvel Arxis game, more about the Marvel Arxis game, because that still remains like up in the air, or maybe it's a new Guilty Gear, or it might also be Lucy from Cyberpunk.
I think they should do a BlazBlue. They should do Marvel versus BlazBlue.
They're doing too many games at this point.
Marvel versus BlazBlue.
No, they should do Guilty Gear versus BlazBlue, because that would be that could almost be a better game. But it's cool, and it also retains some of it. It's a fighting game style, fighting game chops, where especially the regular fodder, you can kind of like juggle and combo. The bosses, when you break their stamina meter, they'll usually start to be able to juggle them and do like combos. And if you can keep them in the air, you can keep them from regaining their stamina back and becoming like a regular, you know, boss that's just gonna do its own attacks that you'll have to dodge. Like you're comboing them to keep them from going back into their loop. But I felt pretty positive on it. The first time I played it, one thing I really didn't like, and I'm really confused that they kept this, is that there is BlazBlue itself has this whole story and lore, and BlazBlue Entropy Effect has one of the dumbest, worst pivots that I can imagine. Instead of doing anything with BlazBlue, the setup for the game is that you're this little and you're running like these mind simulations of characters where you're gonna like pilot a character and then like put them through a sort of like algorithmic test to test out this character and get better at like battle algorithm like data. And there's all this like when you're not playing the actual side-scrolling roguelite portion with the BlazBlue characters, you're playing as this in this, you know, futuristic cyberpunky rainy neon city. You're playing this little droid guy who has his own thing going on, where you're talking to different droids and you're getting bossed around and like, doing missions in this like overworld. Then you go into the game proper and you pick your character, you pick your Ragna, you pick your Hazuma. And then you're like also kind of for a while, you're in these like the first area that you'll always be in, like also a neon cyberpunky city. And then after that, you're kind of like in a swamp. It's so fucking weird that it's named BlazBlue Entropy Effect. It's fully using the BlazBlue license. And like, even though it's 91 Act and it's not Arxis, that's 91 Act is both developing and publishing it, which is kind of weird. But it's fully using BlazBlue and it's using those characters. But then it only utilizes the characters and then nothing outside that. for the aesthetic. Like Blaze Blue, it's so weird because Blaze Blue has all these gorgeous, really cool looking artwork and lore and areas. And I remember immediately thinking back to like hundreds of hours of playing Blaze Blue and the areas, the gorgeous zones and like the stages you could play on, like that huge tower like Lychee stage that is all this like proto-futuristic Chinese, and then there's like gigantic airships and fantasy bullshit, and there's so much cool aesthetic to Blaze Blue. It's weird that the game utilizes, and then instead you're walking around as like this whack-ass droid. What the fuck is that?
That is strange.
And I didn't like, and I remember that was one of the main things that really turned. I think that they've made huge improvements to the overall. And I think that the first time I played in Early Access, it had what you recently texted me when you texted me about Lost, which you didn't say on the podcast, is you said that it had the cardinal sin of having boring upgrades for a roguelike. And I think that that is like, should be in the lexicon for this genre that like, you have to be so critical of this type of genre. And
because there's so much of it.
There's so much of it. And the last like fucking 10 games you just said are roguelike and roguelite. And when a game has like whack ass boring upgrades, then why should it even get an ounce of your time? And that was my problem with and I was annoyed that the developers made such a good game, but then made boring upgrades. But then you have Entropy Effect. I think originally in the early access, it had horrible upgrades. So now the game, like, it plays much better, looks even better. The upgrades are very fun. I think all of the actual playing of the game is good, but it's still weird to me that it's still not a total layup. It could have been a total layup if you're walking around and you're, like, walking around as a Blaze Blue character, or you're, like, a human being, maybe that's, like, you know, let me tell you the story of Rog. Like, who do you want to hear a story of? Okay, this is the story. And then, like, that's the, you know, setup for, okay, now we're going to play this roguelike game. Like, why do you what is going on?
Like, well, who, me. Who I'm not, I'm not the guy who put the droid in the game.
Whatever.
Put the droid in the bag.
In a quick one, the Arbides DLC came out for Darktide, and Darktide hit, I think peaked at 108,000 concurrent on Steam only, which okay. I think is Darktide's.
It's best, also on Game Pass.
Best numbers. Arbides was a really cool and I think smart choice, clearly based on some of the numbers and the current way the community feels about the patch. Arbides are. I learned this recently, and it's story. Before Games Workshop, colloquially known as James Workshop, I don't know if you knew that, but everyone in the Warhammer community calls it James Workshop. Before James Workshop created Warhammer 40K, they were appropriately, as you might imagine, making tabletop RPGs and little plastic like minifigures.
And sounds expensive.
And one of the first things that they made, they were licensed to make Judge Dredd, a tabletop RPG. So then when they made Warhammer 40K, they said, we have all these molds for these Judge Dredds. Shouldn't we, like, put that in our, like, you know, save money and cut costs and, like, basically reuse this mold to make a character archetype? So one of the first units that was ever made in the like 40K proper, when there was originally just like, you know, orcs and Tyranid and humans, one of the original units that were made were Arbides, which are extremely Judge Dredd coded. Their whole thing in 40K is they are exactly like you might imagine if you know Judge Dredd. They are like judge, jury, executioner. They sort of hyper police that have the ability to like kill citizens that are not acting out the law, and the law is of their own making, which is pretty fucking dystopian. They kind of write the Lex Imperialis, which is their own law, and then go out and murder people for infractions on the law that they make. So it's very 40K. And so this is the fifth character class in Darktide and having a fantastic time with them. It's very funny because I think the community is also having a fantastic time with them because four RBDs. Very cool. It is a tanky, supporty summoner class where you have a Robodog that if you ping an enemy, the Robodog will keep attacking them. And you can also use the Robodog while you're being crowd controlled. So like a good example is that it's the first character where normally if you get bit by the dog and Darktide, the enemy dog and Darktide, you're pinned down, you need a ally to shoot the dog off of you, but in with the RBDs you can actually ping the dog on you and have your own dog get you out of trouble. But any excuse to play Darktide is fine with me.
Sounds good.
They had a huge another huge update and balancing, and it's just a great time to play that game.
Cool.
And that is not a roguelike. It is not an extraction shooter. It is not a roguelite. It is a straight-up horde shooter. And that is awesome because it's one of the first things I've said that is different.
It's a horde shooter, like FBC Firebreak.
Oh, are you playing that?
No, but it is on Game Pass, which is the only way that I would play it because $40 seems like a steep asking price for what it is.
Is there anything else that you're playing?
Nothing that I have not talked about recently. Soulstone Survivors hit 1.0. I played a little bit of Peak, which is a new game. It was on sale for $5. So Peak is an interesting story. It was a game jam game where two companies, AgroCrab and Landfall, who are developers that you may or may not know, Landfall made Totally Accurate Battle Simulator and Rounds.
I do know that.
Whereas AgroCrab made Another Crab's Treasure, which is a Souls-like that is actually a lot of people dig it. So these two studios got together, and in a few weeks, they made Peak, which was on sale for $5. Now it's up to full price at $8. One of the developers from Another Crab's Treasure lamented and was like, "Why I'm kind of frustrated that this game we spent a few weeks making is performing so much better than Another Crab's Treasure, which took a dramatically longer amount of time to make." So Peak is a co-op climbing game. It is every day, every 24 hours of real time, a new area is developed. So there are four stages in the game. I've only seen the first two, which are the shores and the tropics. And you are effectively just trying to climb up them. As you climb up the area, you are going to find like procedurally generated equipment. So you might find like food that's going to help you stay alive. And by stay alive, I mean it's going to give you like a better stamina bar. And then, or you might find something like or something that allows you to help people down, or like an energy drink, which is going to give you temporarily max stamina, but make you tired after a while. And the whole goal is just like you are working cooperatively with people. It's got like the proximity chat, and you're just trying to get through areas. So it's kind of cool because there'll be like these cave networks that you could get lost in and like not know where your friends are, but you could kind of like follow their voice and follow the echoes and stuff like that. And that works well. There's backpacks where like somebody will be carrying stuff, so they'll be a little bit slower, have a little bit less stamina. So you might play as like the point person who isn't carrying anything. So you're able to get up certain areas first. And then once you're up at an area, you can like give people a hand, reach down and pull them up. And you can also sort of like lift people up on your shoulders and give them a boost. But I do kind of like the idea that everybody on the same day is like working on the same level. So it kind of has like this fun kind of like Wordle element to it of like, okay, what's today's like peak look like? Except it's really fucking hard.
Really? That's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
There's one map a day. There's like a unique map a day.
Yep.
That is a really, really neat thing to do.
Yeah, so there was, like, the first day I played it, there was, like, such an absolutely brutal stage two, and I almost wanted to, like, look up Twitch streams and be like, okay, I want to know how other people are specifically solving this mountain. Like, what does it look? What does this mountain look like? But cool idea. The game works really well. It's fun vibes while also being like kind of terrifying and treacherous.
That's really neat. That's a cool idea, especially for the bargain price.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people
price that like you could get for other people to like convince other people to play with you, you know?
Yeah. You really would want four people.
Four people is the max. I think that the game works probably well at two. So I would say good at 2 to 4, probably a lot less fun solo. So what do you think about that?
I think that that is peak, if you know what I mean.
That's peak gameplay. And that's all the games, right?
Let's see. I do want to say Sean's top 25 at some point. I guess maybe I'll end it quick by saying that I'm playing, but too early on to make a decision about Marvel Mystic Mayhem. This is a gotcha.
Not the fighting game. That's a
it is not. That's a different one. Marvel Mystic Mayhem is a gacha game. It has a really, really good, cool aesthetic. It's actually by NetEase, which I think a year ago I would have said gross. And then now I'm like, well, you know, NetEase is the publisher for Marvel Rivals, and like they be murdering it out there. So I had very high hopes for it. Other than the style and the way that they took these known characters and changed them in really cool, unique ways, it almost looks very, Midnight Suns-esque with the way that they looked. Like, for example, like the Iron Man in this game is black with, is like all black armor, gold trim, very cool look to it. The Hulk in this game, very dope version of the Hulk, long black hair, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, spiritual tribal tattoos. Psylocke has like energy tentacles coming out of her. And the choices for the initial group of characters are really not the ones you'd expect. And I love that.
Why would they choose to do that, you think?
I don't think
they can release like fun characters later on that like they kind of are like, oh, this is, you'll never believe it. Like Deadpool.
They're making Deadpool. Sure. Yeah. Like they're making Deadpool. I mean, it's always appropriate to be wary of any video game, especially a gacha game or mobile games. But I think that's maybe that's some of it. I think that on a less cynical note, as someone who increasingly enjoys the Marvel IP since Snap, which really brought me, Marvel Snap really brought me into all of I am impressed by their side and lesser known characters. I think it's easy to see the characters that everyone knows that are in Avengers movies. But when you see some of the side characters, it makes you fall in love with these characters that are kind of a little bit lesser known, but really interesting. I think that this is a really wild group of characters to start with. There is characters like Sleepwalker, Doppelganger, which is like a six-armed freak Spider-Man. Sleepwalker almost looks like Martian Manhunter. Never heard of that character before. Mr. Negative is one of the initial characters in this game, which I think is really cool. That's a really cool character. Psylocke, Misty Knight is one of the first characters you get. Lady Bullseye. There's some deep dives in here, which is weird because like the ones that you would know are like they've got the Hulk, they got Iron Man, they got Scarlet Witch, they got Thor. So there's you know, they have a lot of, they're hitting the correct ones, the correct characters for a lot of people, but then they have those little lesser known weird choices. I don't want to make like a final say on it, of course, because it kind of came out earlier today. I think that the way that it plays is actually very good. There's every character has an ultimate that builds up, and they have two abilities. And it almost works like a card game So the game is actually...
We love card games. We love Marvel card games.
We do love Marvel card games. The game is almost auto-unfriendly. If not, it is auto-unfriendly. You pick three characters, which I think is a problem, because it's a Marvel game and it's a gacha game. So you want to have like a little bit more characters on the field maybe at once. Three characters is not a lot. I don't know if it has to be that way or if they can maybe change it if they are getting feedback. But so far, everything I've played for the first day has been only picking three characters. And the characters have two abilities, but you draw from them from a deck that has to cycle through. And you can only see three abilities at the same time. So you might not have access to an ability that you want of a character's. Hulk has a physical attack that is around himself, and then he has a gamma clap. He has a gamma clap.
Yeah, I played Marvel Rivals, I know.
So far the ways that like you might interact with the enemies are that you put the characters down, and then almost AFK Arena or AFK Journey style, your characters are going to move around based on what they want to do. So like range characters will move to an area that has the closest target, melee characters move to the closest melee, and then where you're positioning your characters means where the enemies will aggro initially. And then like AFK Arena, you might have something where an enemy might start out and then in the first second teleport to the back line. So like that, then you have to think about, do I need to have someone tankier in the back line? Do I need to have my Hulk in the back line to tank the assassin coming in the back line? But then when you're drawing and playing the cards, it comes from where the character is located. And then you're lining it up as a skill shot. So if there's Hulk Gamma Clap, then you're going to line up and try and Gamma Clap the widest amount of targets. But then there's this whole physical versus magic weakness where some enemies are weak to some magic, some enemies are weak to physical, so that you might have to cycle through your deck to find, I need Hulk's Gamma Clap for a magic weakness enemy, and I want Hulk to be positioned in such a way that he can clap like four of these.
Oh, is Hulk going to give the gamma clap to magic?
Ugh. He's going to give the gamma clap. Oh, Armor is one of the first characters in this game. That's a character that I really want.
He's a cool character.
So that's that game. No final word on that yet. It remains to be seen. I'm always interested. Like, I play these games and I like playing these games. Oh, but I just got Black Knight in a poll. That's a dope ass character right there.
He's a cool Marvel Snap card.
He's a cool Marvel Snap card. I got Lady Bullseye, Doppelganger, and Black Knight out of my pull right there. Pretty good pull, if I do say so myself.
They just added Dormammu to Marvel Snap.
What's his deal? Is he a 7-Eleven and you have to summon him?
You have to create a summoning ritual by doing three different steps, and then he gets played out of your hand.
Or I guess you could probably also ramp and then make him come out earlier, right? If you ramp,
yeah, but a 7-Eleven isn't worth it.
I guess so. You're right. There's better stat lines at 6 cost or 5 cost too.
Those are games. Watching any good TV?
I finished Severance.
Cool.
I liked it a lot overall. Though I do think that I wonder if that was all of that in the second season was planned, because I think the first season had this mystery to it and it had a sort of corporate nightmare philosophy to it, and then I think in season two it's a little bit more magical in a way that is like some people might like it, some people might not. I think that there, the first season was very scientific and nightmarish, and then now the second season I think is a little bit more magical and wild, you know, and it's like, I don't know if but I also watched Sinners. And I liked that
movie.
I thought that movie was fantastic.
I mostly watch like AI slop.
My God. You know, I'm getting so much AI slopped at me.
Like a pug on the beach saving a baby, or like a pug saves a mermaid and then sells the mermaid to like the circus, but then feels bad about it and then takes the mermaid out of the circus.
Recently, there's been a lot of like weird that, AI slop about AI finish what the... finish this image, what's happens at the end of this picture, and a monkey will fly out of the side. Like someone takes a stab. Picture, and then the monkey, have you seen this? Is that why you're laughing?
No, I haven't. Okay. It's something
about the, about like whatever AI that people are, I don't know if it's ChatGPT or something, but for whatever reason, the AI keeps making it so that a monkey jumps out of the side of the frame and then snatches the person's hair and then runs on the side. I don't know why that's the case. Ika recently linked to me, like, I've been getting a lot of AI from my mom from Facebook because I assume that's what Facebook is.
Oh my God.
Now.
Yeah.
So my mom will like send me like, oh, look at how cute this is. It's like a kitten dressed up with like a tuxedo, but it's like, no, that's not a kitten. That is AI. And they're not wearing a kitten. Like, but she sent
it's
me
tragic.
Like,
it's really yeah. tragic. Is that going to be like in the future? It's going to be like us being like, no, I saw this meme, but like, it really does resonate with me of being like, no son of mine is going to marry a chat bot.
Yeah, I that happened recently for the first time.
That's going to be us, right?
You know, I got interested in AI because I also, other than that, I'm getting so much AI slop. Ika sent me Friends, the show Friends, but they're all black. And then it sent me down this wormhole of like, what is going on in culture right now and how weird AI is and how much AI and how readily available it is and ChatGPT
really
as well.
And the people are willing to eat
the
it
word
up.
Is awful. The word is awful. It's only awful. One thing I didn't know is the insane amount of energy and resources it requires for AI to
it's a lot. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do anything. So I had recently heard that one big thing I was watching was this popular video game recently that is like everyone was excited. A lot of people were excited about it because The Sims doesn't have any competition. So there finally was a game that has actual competition. So this game came out recently this year called Enzoi.
I'm familiar with this.
And it is a Sims kind of game where you're making, building a house and like going to work and leveling up their stats and making relationships and building a family or whatever. But I don't know if you knew this, but Enzoi is a complete flop.
You're cutting out a little bit, by the way.
Enzoi is, let's see, is my gain not up high enough?
It might be your gate is, your gate is a little bit low. Enzoi. Enzoi.
Yeah. Yeah. Enzoi is complete AI slop. Most of the artwork on the inside of the game is made with AI. The company lied about it and said that that it's fine that it's AI because and that you can also like tell AI in the game like I want a shirt with the most crazy pattern. Like I want the most dynamic pattern because that's how Dan flashes, like it makes it expensive. And then the AI in the game, there's a generative AI inside of Enzoi that will make you a Dan Flashes shirt.
That's really crazy because it's expensive for them to do that. Like they're paying for you to generate that shirt.
Oh, well, not exactly, because they say that they are using their own generative AI. And like you had just said, it is very expensive. When you generate an AI image, when I was looking at it, it was like Stable Diffusion or ChatGPT as example. One AI image is equal to charging your phone 500 times. And the computers that are you're interfacing with AI are so powerful that they're requiring so much energy and they're having to be like liquid cooled and they're burning through water, and that like in something like in 10 years, if AI goes to the current rate, AI itself will require more water than there is on Earth. If like the demand for AI continues to increase at the rate it's increasing, in 10 years, the water cooling required for AI will require more water than there is on Earth. Insane what AI is. But
I don't know how much of that is, those measurements are exactly true. I would have to check that. I know that it is at a large scale, very consumptuous, but a single query in and of itself isn't.
Not a query, images.
I understand. It's a query. No, that is a query. Yeah, querying for an image or prompting for an image. I don't know that it's that much, but I would be curious. I've had a hard time in the past getting a read on it because it is, as you know, I work in AI. So it is, you know, a question that I'm constantly asking myself of like, what is the cost of the type of work that we're doing here?
So I want to say Ima is the YouTuber, Inzoi is Solus AI. Some of these statistics from, and I'm pulling this from. They said it's fine because we're using generative AI that we built. Limus supposes, and if you follow his logic and watch this video, which I think is very interesting and is worth it is worth watching if the last things I said were interesting to you or the viewers. He says that would be literally impossible. That even like the original AI, like Stable Diffusion, took like 80 billion images to learn what it currently learned originally. And that when you look at the information, when you look at the files for Inzoi, it's actually using Stable Diffusion. It's just outsourcing that. It's not their proprietary thing. It's outsourcing it.
So there's some interesting stuff about the use of water. So a year ago, it took around a 16-ounce bottle of water and a 16-ounce bottle of water would get you around 5 to 50 interactions. So here's an interesting comparison, though. It takes 3,000 liters of water to produce the meat of a cow. So like the meat of a steak, imagine, like to get a steak. That steak is effectively 3,000 liters of water. And one thing that's interesting, I don't know if you've heard about this, there are companies that use the heat offset of AI to work like with saunas. So they'll have companies that are like, okay, we have a server farm here. Next door, we're setting up like a fitness center with like saunas or like a pool or something, and we're heating the pools using the offset from the AI farm, effectively the data center. So yeah, it is like as it scales up and more people are using it, it is definitely an extreme economic factor. And what's really funny is I've been looking up and trying to understand the sort of weather situation that we've been dealing with over the last couple of days. And I'm constantly querying like, what is the cause of this current heat wave? And every time I check, the AI overview is always like, it's caused by climate change. Like it's the first thing it says is like, the current heat wave is a result of a heat dome. Heat domes are a direct result of climate change. So the self-awareness of the AI model of like the actions that you're taking to get the answers to this, which by the way, it's just like Google, and then Google gives you that AI overview. But it is this weird thing of like, oh, you want to find out why it's so hot? It's because you're asking why it's so hot.
Yeah, but also those are wrong. Like the Google, I've seen it before where the Google AI overview is just straight up wrong. The other thing I was interested in, because we were talking about people who are getting married to AI, is that there's like religions spawning about AI, and the world is a bizarre teetering seesaw at this point. And it is kind of infuriating. I think that people need to be taught that there's also like a ChatGPT subreddit where they share like funny or wacky responses that ChatGPT sends that almost makes AI sound smart or like it's learning, and it's not. It's not learning. We don't currently have access to that style of AI. It's a better version from like what I had looked at when I was in this rabbit hole, was that it is basically, and you can correct me if I'm wrong in saying this, it's basically a one step smarter version of what your phone does when it's guessing the next word you're gonna say. So it just like it's using online data and past inferences and like collection of inference of outcomes and searches to guess the next appropriate word.
So you are exactly almost right. What is on your phone is called a small language model. And the idea of a small language model, we're getting beyond video games. A small language model is it's like a large language model. It's like a GPT, but it's small enough to fit on a phone. It's handheld, something compact. Whereas a large language model,
like the small language model is guessing the next, not the whole sentence.
Language model, it could do a number of different tasks. But I will say that the large language models like GPT, it's many, many steps more intelligent than that. But the underlying architecture is the same. And you're right in that what it is effectively doing, it is predicting in order to get the outcome that you're desiring, what would be the next best word that I could produce in front of the last word that I said.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right on that account. That is what it's doing. It is a lot more than just like the thing on the phone.
Yeah, but it's not like this. Like people try to link ChatGPT screenshots, or this guy divorced his wife and married ChatGPT, and that is true. Mm-hmm. People, I think, and then there's like this religion spawning about. There's so many people who are like loving their ChatGPT in a way and thinking that it adding a personality to it that is like not really true. It is like you said, the difference between a large language model and a small language model, but it is kind of just like guessing and inferring based on an algorithm, like what is the next appropriate thing to say. It's not intelligent. Yeah. It's not like learning or.
And it's interesting because, I mean, there's the consumer-facing version of ChatGPT, and then there is the more complex version that you get with a subscription. So the simple version is just that chat window, right, where it's just like you put something in and it gives you something back. But the more complex version is that on the left side, there's an engine. And on the left side, you can essentially tell the machine how to act. You can give it like when someone says this, you need to act in this way, and you could feed it with like examples. You could give it like an attitude based on like, you could be like in the style of this book, yada, yada, yada on the left side. And then the right side, you sort of have like that chat box other version, but it's directly interfacing with what you've taught it and instructed it to do on the left side. In a way that can cause it like effectively like to mirror a number of different things. And this is effectively how people build like chatbots out of it, where they're training it on specific instructions.
This is your wheelhouse.
And I'd like to see how this would affect. Also, like, I will be the first one to say it, like, it's all fucking terrible. All generative AI is bad. All generative AI is bad for almost everything. On every occasion, I understand why some people use it, and I use it in my personal life in a few different ways. We use it to generate like characters and images for D&D. I understand the idea that like you could pay artists to do that, but we can't really have an artist to on the fly like generate a character for D&D for us.
That's a cool use of it, I guess, also because you would likely not do it. Regardless, I think it's a much shittier feeling when you see a company using it, because you're more and more often seeing Coca-Cola ads or something that has AI in it, and that's very frustrating because there's people who are not working.
Yeah,
but went to school for this kind of thing, and like they're not getting work because some jackass typed that in.
But I definitely don't have to say this. Like the issue with AI. Is not necessarily just that it's making people lazier and making people dumber, which I realize is the same thing we've been saying about every technology forever. But the biggest issue with AI is that generative AI is built upon stolen media.
Yeah, exactly. That's a frustrating thing. Because whenever you do, like the interesting thing is that whenever you're generating that D&D image, it's looking at artwork from the internet. And it's pulling people's like actually made artwork to say like, what does, James wants a rogue with pointy ears. What does that look like? And then it looks at different images with those tags, and then
all the deviant art images of pointy-eared rogues from the last two decades. But the biggest issues aren't like people generating the D&D characters. It's people who are generating deepfakes and misinformation. And the other part is there's been studies done that as a result of AI, people who are typically cautious about data are now rejecting real information and just saying that's AI. And now it's become a thing of just like, you'll hear Donald Trump be like, that video of me isn't real, it's AI. Like, yeah. Oh, me stumbling, that's not real, that's AI.
Yeah.
Like, so it's...
It's interesting because it rapidly went the other way where now, I think there was initially that concern of what if you... someone uses someone's face to make like a porn video or something, but then it can almost rapidly go the other way where anyone in any embarrassing video can say like, no, that didn't happen. But I mean, it, also Trump's base, like were they really going to question it anyway? Like he could use that he could have that response loaded up.
I mean, the other part of this that people should know if they care is that the big, beautiful bill part of it has an addendum that no legislation can affect OpenAI and this legislation of AI for the next 10 years, which will basically make it an impenetrable system where it will be extremely challenging for us to place restrictions on the use of AI for the next decade.
That's very dark. That's actually incredibly dark.
I don't know if you knew that, but it's...
I did not know that.
An important factor.
It's a big, horrible... I mean, I already knew that bill was horrendous.
A lot of Trump's base is also turning on him, and a lot of his constituents and people in the Senate and Congress who were previously on his side are really turning on him over the big, beautiful bill, over the spending, and also over the actions in Iran. And bringing us into
I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot I've been hearing Trump's base is starting to turn on him a lot over the last 10 years. But I'll see it when I believe it, because I think that they exhibit the sunk cost fallacy in such a phenomenal way that you cannot tell them that he made a mistake without it being like, oh, you're a Democrat. Yeah. You're against
also,
us. That's like, there's nothing, you know.
Highly recommend watching the most recent episode of John Oliver, which is about AI slop.
I watched it.
Yeah, so you saw the interview with Tucker Carlson and JD Vance there too. Mm-hmm. It's a weird world. It's a fuck this place. Anyways, that's
very stupid. It's very unbelievably stupid. That's games, but I feel like this is going so long, but I've been wanting for a while now, because I think that you would find this interesting, and I think that our viewers would find this interesting.
Is it Sean's top 25 games of all time?
Sean's top 25 games of all time. He did give me some. I don't know if I'm going to have the time for.
Sean is the only one listening at this point. Everybody else tuned out.
No, we have Rob and Kyle are still there. All right. What do we got? So we got starting from number 25, PN03, which I think is one of the most wild ones. I think he also said that would swing for the fences and make it personal. SOTC, what is that? Symphony of the... Why am I not... Shadows of the Colossus. Jesus Christ, why wasn't that on my top 25? Right? That's weird that wasn't on my top 25.
Wait, did he give you abbreviations for games? Like PN03, I realize that's the name of the game.
Only that one.
Did he send you SOTC? Okay, what else do you got?
Only that one. Ico... Bomberman Hero, Pokemon Diamond, 20 is Castlevania Aria of Sorrow,
great
Slay the Spire,
oh wow,
Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, which is fantastic, awesome.
I was expecting Slay the Spire further up.
Really? Yeah, he does like that.
For Sean, yeah.
Donkey Kong Country, Dragon original. Warrior Monsters.
Even the though the second one is way better, but also the second Dragon Warrior Monsters is way better.
Oh my God, he has another one on here that I'm like, holy shit, I missed out on one that should have 100% been on my list. I can't believe it. Number 15 is Super Mario World. 14 is Resident Evil 4. Tales of Symphonia, which is definitely the best Tales of game. Metroid Prime. Super Mario RPG, another really good choice. Top 10 is Overwatch. I think I had Overwatch on my, did I have it on my like mentioning my mentions because of how good the Overwatch alpha was? It, like, I still think I about the Overwatch alpha. Phantasy Star Online. I cannot believe I didn't say that one. I have to have played that game for thousands of hours. That was a GameCube game. I think it was also like way ahead of its time in loot drops and almost like modular missions and teaming up and being like classes, playing as classes. World of Warcraft, Super Smash Bros. Brawl. I remember him saying that he has played, you know, he played a lot of Brawl with the one that he remembers the most fondly, actually, even with all his Melee time. Link to the Past. Number 5 is Baldur's Gate 2. Dark Souls 2. League of Legends is number 3, which Nate laughed at. If Nate made it this far, and then maybe he laughed at it again. Silent Hill 2. And number 1 of all time, Ocarina of Time. Very good list. So good that it made me think of, that made me sad that I missed some things on my list.
To each their own. You know, there's only so much space in your head for this stuff.
There's only so much space in your head for this stuff. And there's only so much space on an individual episode of WTDG before it gets so long that I have to cut it off. So we have to end it now.
Thanks for playing.
Thanks for playing, everyone.
Maybe we can play some Night Rain. But we'll AI. See. We'll have to get an AI partner.
Is there a way I can, let's see if chat, is there a way that, I don't even have ChatGPT, ChatGPT free, ask ChatGPT anything for free, ask anything. How should I sign off of my video game podcast? But this is a fucking, this is a whole thing. Casual and chill. All right, that's all for today, folks. Keep on gaming. We'll catch you next time. That's nothing, ChatGPT. And that's a wrap for this episode. Game on and take care. Nothing. That's a swing and a miss. I do not like it.
All right, here we go. How about this? Tune in next time, if you dare, for more Pixels and Mayhem.
Hold on. I don't have anything like that.
I asked it to make it edgy.
Until next time, may your loot be epic and your wins be many. Keep your health bars full and your playthroughs smooth. See you in the next one. That one works. That one works a little bit.
If you thought this episode was good, just wait until we really piss your parents off next time.
All right. So I said make it hornier. And some of the things I got. All right. That's a wrap for today. Hope you've had as much fun as we have. And all that was in italicized. If you're wondering why I said that. Until next time. And with that, we're out. Stay hot. Keep gaming. And remember what happens in the game. Unless you're. What that mean? Unless we're talking about your high scores, what does that mean? We're logging off now, but don't worry. We'll be here to keep you entertained. Until next time, keep it spicy, gamers.
How about this? Go fuck yourself.
Did it say?
Go fuck yourselves until next time, gamers.
It did not. Can ChatGPT say? It can say fuck.
Join us next time for more, or just go fuck yourselves.
Can it say fuck? I didn't know it could say fuck.
You think this was wild? Just wait until next time, motherfuckers.
I don't know why, but the way that this is working, mine is getting like, go fuck yourselves until. What is mine is my answers are horrible.
I guess I'm better at prompt engineering than you. I said make it edgier and use the word fuck.
Okay, well, I didn't say use the word fuck. All right, that's a wrap. Keep your hands where you can see them, but feel free to get a little hands-on in the. Catch you in the next one. That's it for today's episode. Hope you're all feeling charged up and ready for more. I don't know why they're adding the way that it's sounding is. We're logging off. They're just italicizing things. Nothing about this is sexy. We're logging off, but don't worry. We'll be back on to keep you on your toes. Until then, may your loot be epic and your playthroughs, which is italicized for some reason, unforgettable. Playthroughs is not.
How's this? That's it for this week. Now get yourselves off, because next time we're going to show you some truly fucked up shit that'll make you that'll make you come in your pants.
Now, I think we went. Did we go back around and make it
stay hard, stay horny, and don't forget to fuck around and find out? Because we'll be back next time with more shit that'll blow your mind.
Hold on, can you bookmark that one, because that's all for today, you sexy gamers. Hope you're getting your game on, something else, and something else too. Until next time, you filthy fucks. And well, that's it for today. Hope you got your headset on and your other things in order. That's none of the, what is, these aren't like, catch you next time, you filthy fucks. And with that, we're out. Keep your health bars full and other bars even higher. Game hard, fuck harder.
I really like go fuck yourself.
Game hard, fuck harder. What?
See, it's tough because it's funny.
It's
funny because
that sucks. We just ruined the episode with
go
that.
Go fuck yourselves until next time, gamers.
Go fuck yourselves until next time, gamers. we can't say any other logout stuff because I don't think that the other people that made the music for the episode want to be involved. Just delete Craig and get me out of here. What was the one you bookmarked that we bookmarked? Give me that one more time.
I sent it to you. Is the one that you liked. That's it for this week. Now go get yourselves off, because next time we're going to show you some truly fucked up shit that'll make you come in your pants. That'll make you come in your pants.
I really like some of the other ones that are like more just like at the end and just like, so we're signing off for this time. Check your save and come back next week, you fucking idiot. And it's like, why? It's not what being horny is. It's like, stay hard, stay horny, and don't get to fuck around and find out. I like how your ChatGPT bolded fuck, because we'll be back next time with some more shit that'll blow your mind. It's so fucking bad.
All right, we gotta end it. Bye, Craig.
Get ready to fuck some shit up and get wet, because we'll be here next time to make you really squirt. Fucking shit. Right. That was the worst podcast we ever did.
Yep. Yeah.